building the fashion businesses of the future together. Welcome to the Future of Fashion Business. The Future of Fashion Business is about helping aspiring fashion entrepreneurs and designers start their own successful fashion brands by learning from the best, most experienced people in the industry. I am your host, Esteban Julian. For more advice and to learn more about how I started my own fashion brand, make sure you follow my fashion journey on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. I am your host, Esteban Julian, and on this week's episode, I have a very, very special guest, as I do try, or at least try to do on every single episode, called Michelle Lima. Now, Michelle is a guest that I'm very, very proud to have on this podcast, because not only is she the co-founder and head of design at Bluebird Shoes, but she also has a story and a background that I was personally able to relate with a lot. Being the fact that I come from Latin America and she comes from South America, and we are both very aware of the challenges and issues that come with starting a fashion business or just wanting to start in the fashion industry whatsoever in places that are still developing countries like Brazil and Mexico. So not only did we talk about the passion and the love for the industry that you must have in order to succeed in this industry, but also how Michelle was able to succeed despite all the challenges, all the troubles that come with starting a fashion brand in third world countries or other developing countries. This is going to be a casual thing, Michelle, but just to get everything started, I really want to thank you for obviously taking the time to be here today. We are very far away from each other as we're speaking, so I know the scheduling must have been a little bit tough, so thank you very much.
Well, thank you for having me, Esteban, and hi, everyone.
Now, I'm sure everybody is very excited to hear what you have to say. I know for sure I will. I actually found an interview about you online, it was in Portuguese, so I could sort of understand what you guys were talking about. But as soon as you started talking, I was like, you know what? Instead of just watching this whole thing and learning about her in this interview, I'd just rather know nothing so that if I have any questions on our interview, I can actually ask you myself.
Yes, of course.
Awesome. But to start everything out, why don't you share a little bit more information, not only with me, of course, but with our audience about how you started out in the industry, just pretty much what's your story like?
Okay, so as you know, I'm Brazilian, but what you don't know, Esteban, and I'm not sure if everyone knows, is that I was born in an island called Florianópolis in the south of Brazil. And I think I grew up with fashion in my blood. My mother used to have a swimwear company. She produced and she also had a retail shop. She always wore like a very creative person. And to sell bikinis during the winter cannot be easy, you know? Can be very windy and cold. So my mother had to find a solution. And I think her creativity always inspired me because she was one of the first entrepreneurs, Brazilian first entrepreneurs, to export to Australia. And this way, she always told me and my sister to think outside the box. That's an example that I always like to give because can imagine selling bikinis in the winter is not, during the 90s when you don't have internet or anything was a challenge, no? And I also remember something cute. When I was little, I used to play with Barbies and I used to set up with boxes and pillows, some kind of shops. And I used to take the Barbies to go and to shop out the clothes that they want, no? But when we grew up, we kind of moved to São Paulo, which I'm sure you know is the biggest city in Brazil. And yeah. I was like 14, 15 years old. And I always loved fashion, no? I was born in fashion. But I think for me, it was more like a hobby. I was not sure if this is going to be my life. But I think life always plays you some tricks, no? Because I end up with 17 working by accident in a shop where my mother used to be a client. And they asked me to be a sales assistant during the Christmas season, no? And to be honest, I loved the job. It was my first job ever. And I spent the summer working there. I spent the Christmas and also the summer making some money, my first money, and I stayed there. And one day, a supplier from the shop arrived and offered me a job to be her assistant. I didn't have a clue what a supplier chain did, what she did before, no? But I said, yes, let me go to your office and I see, no? When I get there, it was a shoe factory and was very nice. I think was my college degree in shoe production was there, no? I ended up working for her for 2 years, I think. And it was amazing, Stefan. It was a very nice experience. Right after that, I was kind of trying to go to bigger companies and looking more new goals in my life. And I passed through a selection in a very huge group in Brazil at the time called Forum, which I spent 7 years there. Have you heard about Forum?
No, I haven't. I haven't.
It's because Brazil, we have our own universe of brands. It's very challenging to import, to export. So we have our own universe here, no? But it was a huge brand. They have, like, they have at the time 300 shops. Like they were big, no? They had four brands in the group. But I stayed there, and I stayed there almost 7 years, learning everything as you can. I began as a buyer and ended up as a designer. So it was very, again, no, it was another college that I did in my life. But the group, Forum Group, was sold. And I ended up staying an extra year with them to manage my area, no? But I had a new proposal with which was very amazing. And this was a kind of a life-changing. They offered me to be the head designer of a shoe brand called Alexander Berman. And they are a very famous brand, I'm sure you have heard, and they are Brazilian. Yeah. They sell very well in the States, and they have they are from a group called Arezzo from Brazil. No, they're like a $1 billion company now. And I saw my opportunity to start a brand because it was a new brand for them as well, and to explore and to understand a little bit the international market, which was very new for me during the time. And the experience that I had there was like unique. The knowledge that I got, they explain you everything from retail to detail, visual merchandising, product fitting, pricing, was another school, no? But I spent there like more or less 4 years in that company, and they were already consolidated when they decide to leave. They already sold at Barney's, Nima Marcos, Modo Operandi. They had a lot of celebrities wearing their shoes as well, like such as Kate Hudson, Julia Roberts, Rihanna. I used to have lunch with them to decide the shoes that they want. At the time, this was super fun. But every time that we organized the showroom in New York, we have to hire models to present the next collection, no? And every time that these models arrived, they arrived with flat shoes. And that image kind of struck a chord on me, you know, because we developed these fancy, beautiful shoes in Alexander Berman. And suddenly I said, I want to be like them. I want to be practical, comfortable to do whatever I want, no? And they felt so confident, no? And a few months later, I bumped to my future partner, which she was in New York. She did college there in Parsons. She did an internship at Vogue and also Vera Wang. And she was planning to come back to Brazil. And one day, Paula, my business partner, said to me, "Hi, Michelle, you know, I cannot find a Brazilian brand that I want to wear." And I say, "Hey, what's wrong with the one that we do?" And she said, no, I want real shoes. I want real shoes for real woman. I want flat shoes." And then we kind of realized together that there was this gap in the Brazilian market that no one was covering, you know? And we decided kind of to study this market to explore. That's kind of the way that we start Blueboard, I would say, no?
Amazing. And you know what? I really love that you actually had a more practical approach to starting your brand, if I may say that, even use that word, Because I have a feeling that especially in the fashion industry and designers in particular don't want to look at starting their brand as solving a problem. They just get, they just fall so in love with their idea that they stop listening and looking at what the marketplace actually wants or something that is actually needed in the marketplace. And I really like that you actually saw it as a problem, as you said, an opportunity in the marketplace, and you took it. Now, how long did it actually take you from, you know, developing or having that idea to actually starting, you know, selling those products? So after, you know, how doing all the market research, strategizing how you were actually going to produce and sell the product, roughly how long did that take you, and how was that process in somewhere like Brazil?
That's a great question. Well, we knew exactly how to produce a shoe. So I heard that you tried before to produce a shoe. It's a super complex process. Super, you
know? It's like building a spaceship. I tried it. My first company was a shoe company, which failed miserably because I had no idea what I was doing. And when I looked at how, I remember, I think I Googled like how to design a shoe. And I literally was like, dude, I saw like the mold and like the processes, and I was like, dude, I'm trying to build something for my feet. I don't want to fly with this thing, you know. But yeah, I completely understand what you're saying.
It's like to building a house or helicopter. Yeah. Super complex, but I mean, everyone can learn, you know. It's just a challenge, but it's like, it's more a little bit technical, no? But we spent 1 year designing our first product. This is very important. When I say first product, we decided to see how we want this product. And we kind of thought the brand as a person. So we add a lot of components that was important. We kind of arrange a lot of value proposition that we want, no? We knew exactly what we want in a shoe, no? We want to offer to our client, no? We want the shoe that we cannot find. It was like high quality, very attractive price point, but most important, great design, but most important, comfortable. There were no comfortable shoes. This is a huge industry, but most of the industry is dominated by men, no? And they produce shoes for us. And I see some of the podcasts, and they say, oh, the shoe must fit, and then we sell. No, no, no. They must fit, they must be comfortable, and then you sell. So we start kind of this, no? We spent a year thinking, I think we kind of appropriate of our colors. We have two important colors, a light gray and a dark blue. Sorry, a light green and a dark blue, which we talk and we explore these colors to talk up with everyone as a voice from our brand. No? So it was important for us to spend this year imagine how the brand would speak, how the brand would act, how it was going to be this first product, as we're going to only sell one. They must be, has to be amazing, you know? This was our challenge in this year, no?
Absolutely. Plus you also, because I assume you didn't just, obviously these things were something that you came up with, but you had to test it with your marketplace, right? You have to verify if they actually liked the colors, if they actually felt that it was a comfortable shoe, if they found it appealing. Because I don't assume you just threw that idea out there, you know, invested in a production route and then just hope for the best, right?
No. First, I just want to rewind a little bit because as you said something very important, man. You said everyone doesn't want to solve a problem. They just have this idea. Watch out with the ideas because the market has a lot of ideas. Everything the market already exists. We have a lot of shoe brands. We have a lot of brands. So if you're doing something, do it different or add value, no? In our case, Brazil is recognized as a shoe industrial capacity, and Bluebird took advantage of that. For instance, our shoes are handmade. We kind of are inspired in their artisanal process, which involves up to 32 people and 100 processes, Esteban. Wow. Our shoes are also molded for 24 hours, and the insoles fold twice the cushion as a regular shoe, ensuring maximum comfort to any feet. That's the idea. And imagine how tough it is. We are saying, we're open the range and say, hey, this is a comfortable shoe for every woman, no? So this was kind of a challenge. So The market in Brazil, it's very competitive, and I would say the world is competitive. No, fashion is a very difficult to position as a brand now. It's a very challenge, and you have to be very smart and strategic. No, but whereas we only sold a model, the loafer, for a single year, we were kind of seeing the direct to consumer wave starting in Brazil and everyone moving to the online. But we decided to open a shop first. Why? Because we thought the shop would be like a lab for us. No, because everyone's right.
Go on.
No, everyone says, oh, you can measure what you do through our online operation, but you also can see how many people you come to the stores, what they look, what they want, what they have to, what they see, what they need, what they ask for. And this is the most valuable thing in our company today, this real data. And I think for us, it was very important as a new company, as a new business, to start with a shop. Now, in our days, of course, the internet's growing a lot. No, Bluebird will become a digital brand with physical presence. No, but I love shops. They are labs. No, one of our shops, every sales, one of the first shop, we receive 20 products, 20 styles from the new collection, and we kind of test them to see how fast they sell, how great they are, how my clients behave to this new construction of this new product, if they like it or not. So for us, this contact with the real person, because in the end, the market had changed. It's not my idea. I have to collaborate and understand my client to develop something that they want, no? So for us, it's I see a lot of people talking about the internet, and I also agree. But for beginners, I would suggest try be in a corner, try to be in a, try, if you have a little bit more money, try to open a
street.
Because sometimes it's cheaper than to go through online operation, because in our days, we have now, we just become like, it's the first month that we are doing a strategy in marketing we never did before. But they're expensive.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
No, and I agree. I mean, because the most important thing and is that, you know, your product actually sells. That's the most important thing. If you sell 20, you most likely are going to sell 100 or 200 or 500, you know? So it's very important to keep it simple. I love the fact that you only designed one loafer. Because I really do believe, and I don't know what you think, hopefully the same as I do, that it's very important to keep it simple when you're starting out. You know, keep your product development very simple. Choose one thing to sell. Make that thing the best. And go out there and try to sell it a couple of times. Once you sell it a couple of times, now you feel a lot more comfortable into taking even bigger decisions like yours. Like, you know, okay, because we sold so many of this, now we feel comfortable about, I don't know, opening a pop-up shop or opening a retail location or something to take things forward in a bigger direction.
Exactly. I think the same. And I think a niche strategy, even in fashion nowadays, I'm following a lot of brands, new brands that are coming up with very niche strategies, and they are going so well because your customer kind of understand your position and your kind of positioning there, and then they follow you, and then they kind of became your fans, and then they kind of talk about your brand and they want more. And when they want more, you offer them different products, different occasions for them to wear, and then you add more things. But wait, you know, you have to listen what they want, no?
No, I agree. I agree 100% with you. You have to, their identity has to match your brand's identity. And that's the whole point of it. And now, we'd like to take a quick commercial break to thank our sponsors. This podcast is sponsored by Your Social Component. At Your Social Component, we help fashion and e-commerce business owners automate and scale their online sales using the best online advertising strategies out there. If you're looking for a marketing agency that completely understands your industry and can scale your fashion and e-commerce business to the next level, make sure you get in touch through our website at yoursocialcomponent.com. Now let's continue with this week's episode. Michelle, there's one question, or there's one topic that I would really like to cover, because it's something that I have, I guess, firsthand experience in, and that would be, you know, actually developing a product in developing countries. You know, you being from Brazil, me being from Mexico. When I was trying to develop my first prototypes over in Mexico, I noticed that the biggest challenge in that country was that you simply could not develop a high quality product because the fabrics weren't good. The processes themselves weren't good. The quality of everything was terrible. And the people didn't take, you know, deadlines seriously. So I really want to ask you, is there any challenges in Brazil sort of like that presented in, for example, those like Mexico with product development, or everything is quite established there?
No, I mean, Brazil, as I said before, is the fourth biggest cluster in the world. They produce a lot of things in Camuto, Dayan, Boom, Fusterberg, as I'm saying, my specific area, no? So they produce a lot of international brands. But of course, when you start, we start with the small factories. And of course, they give you not a great leather. They don't insole your product very well. And you have to be aware. But I mean, if you know what you're doing, there is way of you to organize the system and to make it done. But takes a little bit longer when we are talking about developing countries. No, even in our case, we export. So you have to be very strict with the quality that you're offering. Quality. Yes, to do that. But I mean, there's a lot of challenges in becoming an entrepreneur. No, I think for me, more important, like more difficult than this, is we are a startup. We kind of don't have any money, no? So to hire new talents and to maintain these talents in your team is kind of impossible, no? For me, hiring great people and maintain them very excited about the project, this is a very tricky point, no? Because you're not a huge group. You have a short, limited amount of money that you know you're going to need some more. So how do you keep up these great people in your company? This is one big challenge for me.
Awesome. And awesome. No, I love that. I love that topic. Do you think that's a challenge that every startup faces, or it's something more established in developing countries culture?
I think every startup has this challenge, plus all the challenges that they have to deal with building a new company.
No, that's amazing. That's amazing. I never really thought about it like that, but it makes perfect sense. When it comes to, how about when it comes to financing? Because that is probably the biggest question that pretty much worries people that are starting out is, you know, maybe they have a dream or they have a passion for this certain thing. They want to make it a reality, but they don't really know where to get their money from, you know, especially in cultures like ours where money is this, you know, it's engraved that money is, you know, this super scarce and rare thing that you really have to take care of. So I guess my question would be, what would be the best ways for people that you recommend to people to actually start financing their business, and how they should go about it?
There is no right answer in this, in my
Love
opinion.
It.
How we started this, no? In our case, I sold my car. And my business partner had 50,000 So we did this. And when I look back, was the best decision that I ever made in my life, no? Because before you ask someone's money, use your own. Bet everything that you have, in my opinion, Steven. So you have to bet everything that you have to prove you're right. And then you can add some people's money. You can ask your family and friends, or maybe go to a round of investment. But then you already have something to prove to them, no?
I love it. No, yeah, I agree 100%. I agree 100%. I mean, you're always going to have to take risks, but you know, don't take bigger risks than necessary. You know, don't go to a bank, get a bank loan straight away and just blow all that out. Yeah, as you said, just pull your own money into it. You know, learn from the business first, and then you can start going from there.
Exactly.
Michelle, one of the biggest things of why, well, there's a lot of reasons why I wanted to have you on this podcast, obviously, but something that I really love about your particular situation is that you're very aware and very connected of how this industry works in places like, you know, as I said, Brazil, to developing countries, to countries like the USA, and, you know, countries that are leading this space. So would you say that the challenges that are being faced by fashion brands or fashion entrepreneurs in countries like America or the USA are the same as in countries like Brazil?
In my opinion, I just was invited to go to a direct-to-consumer conference in the US, and I realized that it's way more challenge to build a business in Mexico or in Brazil or in China, India, or any developing country. They have everything ready in the US. They have the triple L's, they have like the logistics systems, they have everything set down to them, it's easier for, sorry to say that, but it's easier to build a company in the US than in my opinion, in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. No, and that's a great point, because I don't know from your perspective, from my perspective, in a way, I guess that is also a good thing, because it just shows the amount of growth that's left for our countries to do. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the only thing that you have to do, or the biggest, I guess, realization is when you actually travel to these countries and you go back to, you know, to Brazil or Mexico or whatever, you notice the amount of opportunity that is out there. And you know, that happens to me living in London and going back to Mexico. And as you said, seeing the amount of, you know, clothing shops, high quality fabrics that are around in the city, and going back to Mexico and finding none of that, that leaves me thinking, dude, it's somebody should start doing this. You know, there's definitely the opportunity here.
I mean, when we start the business, we look abroad. We saw that in the US or in UK, this trend that we were kind of taking advantage in Brazil was already a movement in the US or in UK, no? In Paris or Rome, etc. So when we decided to bring this concept of women going down, they have to be able to think, to work, we did kind of a manifesto. That's the thing that we have to think. We, as a developing country, we have so many things to explore and to bring, to add value in your culture. And we can make a lot of money if we do with our hearts and we know exactly what we are doing, no? If we trust in our business, that there's so many opportunities, I believe. Like in our case, just to give an example, I don't know if you know Brazil, but when we started, we had so many problems. Tax system in Brazil, Esteban, it's very complex. Interest are the highest in Latin America. Logistics.
I have no idea.
Is it still in their development? Oh, we only have 100% of the roads in Brazil. We launched Bluebird in 2015 in the worst economic recession ever faced in Brazil. But even with this challenge, we managed to grow. But why? Because we have something different that the market was offering. When we see crisis, people say, oh my God, I'm not selling. No. You have to think, as my mother said, outside the box. What are you doing differently? Do you offering something different? What are you adding as a value in your product? No?
Yeah, I agree. And I love that you said that, because it's completely true. I mean, just look at the opportunity that's out there. And for example, me, one of the best advice I could give people that are wanting to start in this industry, that are obviously not living in London or not living in New York or not living in LA or Milan or any of these fancy cities, is at least look at what's happening in those cities and try to see how you can do maybe the same thing in your countries. I wanted to ask you something, Michelle, and this is, I guess, quite particular to your business, because it's something that I'm quite fascinated by. Because I did have a look at your product, and you can tell the quality is amazing. Now, I don't really know how to say this in English, but it's an artisanal product, right? So it's made by locals. Are they handmade?
100%.
Wow, how are you able to scale that? How can you send? Yeah.
That's a challenge question. What we did is, as we took us a year to develop the product, to be honest with you, I spent at least 4 months in the factory, because in my previous job, I saw this factory in the south of France that I love the way they produce. And we went to, and they were inspired by the Italians, and we want to kind of replicate that in Brazil with men's in the process involving in cushioning the shoes and everything. So what we did is, I spent 4 months in the south of Brazil producing the shoes. And what we do today is, every time that we have to, the production is getting bigger, because it's getting bigger. We have 6 shops. The e-commerce is growing every day. We export, we sell to all multi-brands in Brazil and outside. So what we do is we open another factory, you know? We go there, we kind of have a recipe of the shoe. So we kind of have a contract with them. They have to assign the contract, they accept the contract, we accept the volume that they are asking for. And there is a lot of, and that's the beauty of the my business, I would say, Esteban. In our days, everyone is talking about fast fashion. Come on, I love this slow fashion. Let's give these men their work, you know? They are passionate about doing a beautiful shoe, no? So this is kind of how we do, no? We open a new factory, we make an agreement with them, and then we are starting to evolve, to produce together, no? But takes a while to open a new partner. Today we have three important partners.
Yeah, so building those relationships takes a long time.
In my case, at least a year.
Yeah. No, yeah, and then that's the thing. You have to be patient. And I think I've made a YouTube video about this, actually, that especially in this industry, you deal with a lot of people. Human relationships are a very, very important thing. So you have to be prepared to wait a lot, you know? Yes. Awesome. Michelle, well, I really, really enjoyed the episode. There's a lot more questions that I would love to ask, but obviously I try to keep them under 30 minutes, just because a lot of people out there, you know, they don't have time to listen to longer episodes. I wish they did, because I really do wish I had more time with my guests. But that does bring me to my last question, and I don't know if I warned you about this one, because all of my guests never know how to answer this quickly, which I understand. And that last question would be, if you could go back in time, you know, back when you were, I don't know, maybe working on that factory or thinking about the first business, what would be the best piece of advice that you'd give yourself and why?
I think trust in yourself. No, don't trust in yourself. Don't, if you do mistakes, correct them fast and keep moving. No, this is, I think, is the most important thing, because sometimes when you're young and you see a lot of people on top of you, you kind of, you know, oh my God, they kind of know everything. If you know something, stand for it, show what you know. And I'm a very curious person, and I suggest for everyone that is working with us or in the industry to, you're not obliged to know everything, but ask if you don't know. No, how you make this? Why do you make this? Be the best as you can. No, this I think would be my advice. Be curious and trust in yourself.
Awesome. No, love it, because I mean, fashion changes all the time. So you do have, not only do you have, I mean, curiosity is, you have to do that to survive. I mean, you have to continuously learn a lot of things. So I do think that's very, very valuable advice. But Michelle, that brings us to the end of the episode. Again, I know I've thanked you a lot. I think you say obrigado in Portuguese, right? No, I don't know if I'm messing that up. Okay.
Obrigada, and always dream big and think big. This is something that I always use as well. I forgot to say.
Awesome. No, love it, Michelle. Thank you very much for being here with us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
If you want to learn even more about how you can start your own fashion brand, make sure you follow me on YouTube at Esteban Julian. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Future of Fashion Business. Make sure you subscribe to listen to our future episodes.